on a steeply sloping hillside by Lake Galilee is a stone foundation about a third of the way up a hill. And it is the foundation of an ancient Byzantine church. It's only a bit of rubble in a rough rectangle about 30 feet square. And to get there, you start from the shore road along Lake Galilee and then walk a stony path upward, upward this steep hill to this ruin. There are a few benches, a stone pillar, and a small marker. It is quiet and green, with a view over the water. It is the site of the Gerasene healing. Nothing is there now but quiet, a few birds, some peace. But that was not always so. This point in Luke's narrative, Luke is showing us Jesus' healing and teaching ministry. And until this point of this story, there have been healings where people have rejoiced and praised God. But this story, Luke begins to add in some things, and the language that Luke uses in this story point to not only this story being part of Jesus' narrative, but part of a much larger narrative. Luke's gospel was probably written in 80 AD or so. And so it was well after the death of Jesus when it was finally codified into much the same form as we find it today. But in those years since Jesus' death, much had happened. And so Luke's language reflects the history, the story within the story. For example, Luke uses a verb where elsewhere that he employs of armies meeting in battle. It's the verb where the demon seizes the man and talks about how the demon would throw him down. That's a verb used elsewhere when guards were rounding up Christians and bringing them to trial. The words that Luke uses to bind this man in the story, hand and foot, chains, shackles for binding and guarding, are the same ones that Luke uses in the account of Acts when the disciples are imprisoned. The word legion in Luke's account that the man gives as the name of himself, for we are many, has a literal meaning as well. It is a unit of Roman soldiers, approximately 6,000, the occupying army. So this healing story is a story within a larger story, a narrative within a narrative, because that very region is the site of a horrifying historical event that the hearers and readers of this text would have known about. Josephus, during the latter part of the late 60s Common Era, toward the end of the Jewish revolt, a Roman general, Vespasian, had sent soldiers to retake Gerasa, that area. They killed those Romans, that legion, killed 1,000 young men, imprisoned their families, burned the city, and then attacked villages throughout the whole Decapolis. Many of those buried in those Gerasene tombs would have been slaughtered by the Roman legions. The story takes on a larger significance. One of the emblems of that legion, the Legio X Fretensis, which was used on banners and on everyday objects, was a boar. And so in this story, when the demons beg to be sent into the pigs, it has also another meaning. It is Gentile territory, therefore no Jews would keep pigs. So we already know that we are in occupied land, in foreign territory, and in home country as well. a story within a story within a story. The story is full of hints of this larger narrative. It's not told, but it is clearly implied. There are few witnesses, but the elements that point to a larger narrative are all there. Today marks 157th anniversary of another quiet and green place in the early morning when federal troops arrived in Galveston, Texas. Lee, General Lee, had surrendered at Appomattox early in the spring. But that news had not quite reached across the United States, and even if it had, there were still fighting. People who refused to believe that that surrender was true or that it held any sway over them at all. And so federal troops finally arrived in Galveston on June 19, 1865, to announce that the Emancipation Proclamation, which had been signed 2 years earlier on January 1st, was now in effect with the end of the Civil War. It took another couple of months for all of the 250,000 Texans still enslaved to be set free. They're not all the enslavers let those people go until the end of the harvest season, holding them still a few more months. Slavery was finally at an end and would be formally abolished in the country with the adoption of the 13th Amendment in 1865 in December. But for this day, the reaction was one of joy and response, of picnics and celebrations. Just 2 years ago, the Board of Trustees of the Presbyterian Church USA, its foundation, voted to make Juneteenth an official holiday and holy day of the remembrance. They voted on this in November 2020. And so they issued the statement, "The Presbyterian Foundation is giving sustained intentional focus on our strategic priority of diversity, equity, and inclusion in who we are as a board and as a staff, cultivating a culture of education of, conscientization in, and proficiency in dynamics of historical, institutional, and systemic racism. Juneteenth is a sacred day of reckoning for the church, and we dare say for our nation, as it brings to attention the delay of more than 2.5 years for official word to reach enslaved people in Texas. The tragedy of that gap in time of justice delayed and justice denied calls forth our collective wills that we as Christians and as a people can never rest until the fullness of racial equality and racial equity is realized." Today, June 19th. So a country within a country, a story within a story. So I'm wondering about this text, particularly on this day. What does it have to say to us about our own enslavement or the others that are kept enslaved, besieged by demons that many others have been able to avoid? Matt Skinner is a professor of New Testament, and he says, nobody wants the transformation of this man except for him. And even he says, "Go away, I beg you not to torment me," to Jesus. The disciples aren't there. There are very few witnesses, maybe the swineherds far off. But in this green and beautiful country of Gerasa, it is quite empty, except for this imprisoned and tormented man. Skinner says, because this town had a deal. They had a system worked out. We chain him up and that keeps us safe. Maybe it keeps him safe, in their logic, and that he should no longer be chained up or tried to control. We tried to control the things that scare us, out of sight, out of mind. And his torment this man was multiplied by a society that does not know what to do with him. Joy Moore says this of her own work. Can the story be told to lean in and allow us to judge our own practices? As the one who is practicing the control and trying to keep others in their place, this is about my desire to take care of them, and which is a desire to keep myself safe, and then being frightened by what I can't control. Maybe we are fearful of what we don't know or we don't understand, whether that is the demon possession or the miraculous transformation. Reality is just a half step away. Maybe I'm not the one who is being freed, but the one who is keeping someone chained. That's a hard thought to ponder. What happens in the story, which drew my attention to it and which continues to draw me to this story, is the reaction of the country of the Gerasenes. When the people came to see what happened, and when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told how the one who had been possessed by demons had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them. The word hemmed in by fear, when he says they were afraid, is hemmed in. It is surrounded and chained and shackled. The story within the story is that not only the man who has been in chains, but the people around him as well. They recoil in fear. They beg Jesus to go away. Maybe it means that we prefer to stick with the demons that we know rather than embrace the freedoms we don't. Maybe it means the shackles and chains that bind so many of God's children are the instruments of our own cruel making, the weapons we wield to manage our own fears, so says Debbie Thomas. Maybe it means we settle for tolerance instead of challenging ourselves to love. Maybe it means the gospel doesn't always bring peace. It also brings upheaval, messing with our moral categories, economic comforts, and social structures in ways we find offensive. Because this is about freedom. And about all of our stories as they are stories connected to and within each other's stories. On Friday, a group of us went to the Peter Doherty House on the Mission Peninsula. It was a beautiful day. We had a beautiful guide and a wonderful time learning about the historic aspects of that place. This visit has arisen out of the place series that we did on the Wednesday night connection, looking at our relationships with the indigenous communities that were here long before us, about 13,000 years. And so, one of the questions that we wish to ask of ourselves is, where is the story within the story here? Doherty, a Presbyterian and a faithful man, often swam upstream against the common mores of his day that called Indians savages. He was friends. He learned language. He shared. There were people living in his home and in that community with whom he shared ministry. And yet, he was part of a larger narrative which sometimes does not always get told. That he too was affected by decisions that were beyond his control. And so, what is our responsibility as those who have benefited from a system that was beyond our control but is not beyond our responsibility? Where do we go from here? There is a larger narrative for our stories as Presbyterians, as Northern Michiganders, of people in relationship with those who were here before us and still are here. One of the things that happens in our lectionary group on Wednesdays is that we try to sum up what we are going to preach. One of the summaries of this whole passage, it says, "I think we're really comfortable in this disease of systemic racism, and when it starts to leave us one by one, we are scared. Amen." That may ring true, it may not. Because the people in Gerasa were really only afraid when he got well. What does that say? If somebody is healed, does that mean we're all sicker than we knew? On this day of sacred reckoning, I think our task is to spread the news. The only ones who shared that news first were the pig keepers who witnessed the whole scene and run to share. When they return with people from both the city and the countryside, the liberated man is sitting calmly at Jesus' feet. The people do not celebrate the good news, that overwhelming fear, the word synecho used in the surrounding of armies and the men guarding people. Because this is about freedom. It's the freedom of Jesus to set us free and to set the whole country of the Gerasenes free of their fear. Not just one person from the demons that torment him, but the whole countryside, Gentile though it is, of their fear too. So when we read this story about freedom that comes in an unexpected way, we look at the country within the country. We look at our narrative of the country within the country, look at the story within the story, and we ask ourselves how many people in our country are still haunted by a traumatic past and tortured by memories. How many live unsheltered, inadequately clothed? How many are imprisoned? How many are regarded as barely human? What does empire still hem us in with today? Jones says, "Jesus comes to challenge and cast out every power that prevents us from living fully and freely as human beings created in God's image. Jesus claims sovereignty not just over our souls, but over our lives here on earth. Maybe we resist that news, finding deliverance from Legion too frightening, too demanding, too costly. But those whom Jesus has healed and freed know that his liberating love is indeed good news." Debbie Thomas was writing about this story in her reflection on a webzine, and she talked about her own response as an African American, as a Black woman, and she says, "I have to look at what I name in my own past and who I am as imprisonment and freedom." And then she ends, "The story ends with Jesus commissioning the healed man to stay where he is and serve as the first missionary to his townspeople, the same townspeople who feared, shunned, trapped, and shackled him for years." I have to admit, this detail makes me laugh. Isn't this just like Jesus? To choose the very people we consider the most unholy, the most unredeemable, the most repulsive and unworthy, and commission them to teach us the gospel, that is God all over. So on this day, June 19th, Juneteenth, a few weeks before our celebration as a nation on July 4th, may we continue to look at the narratives that are part of a larger narrative and find ourselves as people within a larger story. Because Jesus comes to set us free from all of it, from our past, from the chains that bind, from the systems which we did not create but nevertheless must work to undo. Maybe our prayer can be somewhat akin to what the man calls out to Jesus. What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Maybe we go from there to ask for healing. And then maybe we go from there to tell the good news in every green and lovely place, in every country, in every quiet moment, where there is a history within a history, everywhere we go. May it be so. Amen.